Hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years.
And here we are with the slightly delayed episode 72 of Destroy All Culture. I had to think for a second, even though it's staring me in the face, that number. With Aiden Morgan and me, Adam P. Nave.
As always.
As always, yes. I just screwed up everything there. I don't know. I'm not. I am sober. I am awake. I don't know what is wrong with me today.
Just, it's opposite day.
It's opposite day. My brain is skipping tracks already today, which is a great sign, let me tell you.
A great start.
So this last week, you know, the first thing we kind of have to get past, I guess, get through, was a lot of things, of course, ended their season. And, you know, some stuff ended their season last week that we didn't get to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we'll talk about those as well. There's a few, actually, I kind of want to... Let's talk about last week's first, actually.
Yeah, let's do that.
Because S.H.I.E.L.D. ended the season.
Right. Oh, damn. Yeah. Yes, I think I saw that. I saw that season ending. Okay. I'm not totally behind.
Yeah.
That's right. Oh, right, yeah, S.H.I.E.L.D. in space. I think it's S.W.O.R.D., right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it is S.W.O.R.D., because I feel like they're not going to use S.W.O.R.D., but that's just me.
Yeah.
Just because I think, I don't know, some of the stuff with the rights and all that shit gets confusing. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the whole S.W.O.R.D. thing and Agent Brand was all, in X-Men, can the Marvel Universe use them? Can they use the Watcher on the Wall stuff from Fear Itself instead?
Maybe.
You know, right. So we'll see. But it was a good ending to a good season, frankly.
It was, actually.
I don't know if there's anything else to say about that, really.
Yeah, I think, to say it felt a little rushed was maybe unfair, but it did, I didn't feel quite as good as I did about it as I could have, just because the episode beforehand was, like, so well done.
Right, no, and I think part of the problem was, and I was watching, I felt a little rushed, too, because suddenly, here's Ghost Rider, here's this, here's that, you know?
Yeah.
But the only way to build it out, honestly... would have been to just increase the fight scenes.
Yeah.
Like, there was nothing more character-wise to say. It was just all the fights happened really quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I get not wanting to shorthand everything else just so we could have more expensive CG. Like, I'm okay with this.
Yeah, me too. And I like the way they handled Mac.
Yeah.
It could have been... I mean, they gave him some heartbreak, but they seemed to... They seemed to sort of pull back from that heartbreak a little bit to... inject a small note of hope at the end.
I think that's all the characters at this point, isn't it? Like, they're all freshly broken, but they all kind of have some hope that ties into the team, which is a nice touch, you know? It builds the team concept better.
Exactly. So, yes, so this pleases me. They could have gone for some cheap nihilism very easily, they were a little kinder to the characters than that.
Right. While at the same time still making sure that, you know, it sucked. In that
yeah.
In that good, you know, this is how that should go kind of way. Also, Supernatural ended.
It did.
And I know you haven't caught up with this season at all.
No, I'm just the beginning episodes, really.
And I don't want to spoil it, but there were a lot of people who were really pissed about this ending. And it's one of these, they've reduced the cast members.
Okay.
The number of people who either die or look like they die or what, it's kind of hysterical.
Wow, okay. I'm curious now.
And Supernatural, so most of them are coming back. One of them looks like maybe not. I don't know.
Even know if Dean's mother is around by the end of the season. I don't know anything about this season.
I will tell you when you get there. Because again, it's a good season.
Yes.
I think 11 is an amazing season. 12 is a good season. The episode before, because when you watch season 12, there's basically two plots, which is an interesting thing. They have two plots that kind of go around at the same time. and interrupt each other, which is always interesting. Because they the one that they aren't focusing on that week is still moving forward. So it feels like they're always playing catch up. Which is nice, because it's always one of these like, oh, what about this? But there's a bit, one of the plots has you spend, at least has me spend, the entire season going, these guys have to realize that, like, at some point, this is not a smart move, right? Like, and it's just, it's a thing, and you'll see it when you, it's a British Men of Letters thing, basically, and just to spoil for you, because it is kind of the setup, we get the British Men of Letters, and you'll meet them.
Right,
and they're basically like the American.
We've already seen some, like, in the few episodes that I've seen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, they come into a major, major role in this, and they're kind of like, well, we're just going to, you know, fuck the American Hunters. We're just going to get rid of them all because they're ineffective.
Right.
And you know that, like, at some point, it's like, you keep fucking with these people, and have you looked at their track record? Because you say you have records. And these are not really people you want to fuck with.
Yeah, it's saying that, I mean, it's weird because of the American Hunters. I mean, as far as I could tell in Kripke's original vision, I mean, these guys, I mean, Supernatural was basically like a redneck show, which, you know, recast, you know, suburban dudes and weekend warriors and rural hunters as supernatural sort of like fighters.
Right.
And I can see why some snobby Brits would want to come over and sort of get rid of, you know, a bunch of weekend warriors. But Sam and Dean kind of save the world repeatedly, right? And never lose. I mean, they're always losing, but they're always riding that edge of failure.
Right.
So, yeah.
But it's like at this point, they've done so much. That, like, you know, even the British Men of Letters are just like, oh, God. But they're still, like, fucking with them. And there's a moment near the end of this season where it's finally one of these, like, just fuck this. And it is one of the greatest, like, just, I mean, not like one of the, but they kind of earn it in a weird way throughout the 12 seasons of the show sort of thing. Because the whole British Men of Letters thing is like, well, we have these fancy devices and we have this down to a science and we just, you know, we can just take out whole nests of vampires.
Right.
Instead of just, like, using some knives and some guns. And there is a showdown moment where you're just like, oh, see, this is why you don't do that. This is why you're not just like, eh, fuck these guys. And it's a beautiful, beautiful scene. Just for that, like, sometimes you just need to just go, this is what these people are capable of.
Nice.
So, Supernatural, I think, ended really well. I think, you know, again, a lot of people disagree. I know some people who decided to stop watching the show. Because there's at least one character who they're like, oh, he's dead, and everyone knows he's not dead. It's a weird Supernatural fandom confuses me. But, but yeah, so that happened. And then, of course, this week, the remaining CW stuff all ended. In terms of the DC superhero stuff.
Right. So Arrow, so Supergirl, they're a Flash, they're all done now. For about the season.
And they had their big finales all in the same week. Supergirl, Flash, and Arrow. And unfortunately, that lets you kind of compare them.
Good point.
And, well, that might have been a mistake. The Supergirl ending was... I know you haven't seen any of these. I don't want to spoil too much of them for you. But, you know, there's going to be some of that. The Supergirl stuff mostly worked.
Yeah, this is. I mean, I don't know details, but that was what I heard was it mostly worked, but fell short. But I'm not sure how.
Yeah, it kind of just like it ticked the boxes, and most of it worked completely. And there's some of it that just felt a little left fieldish. And a little bit like, well, why would they have just done this? Like, what? You know, there's this whole like we're gonna battle, and just the two of us, and this will decide the whole fate of the planet. And then, you know, the bad guy, of course, cheats, except they still continue as if she hadn't. I'm like, no, once they cheat, you just deal with that.
Hmm.
You know, because it's supposed to be like, you know, Kara and, what's-her-face? Terry Hatcher's character. You know, in a battle, just the two of them, and once Terry Hatcher's character's like, well, I'm cheating, I'm still going to attack your city. Even while you're fighting me, no one helps her with the fight. I'm like, why not? What does it matter? If she's obviously not going to live up to her end of the bargain.
Right.
why would you continue this? Like, it just, that made no sense at all other than it looked pretty. They also had a little moment that I will spoil because it had to happen with a Kat.
Oh, yes.
Where, like, you know, Kara's there and Kat Grant's giving her a little pep talk and all this. And, you know, it's near the end of the world type of thing, whatever. And Kara leaves. And after she leaves, Kat just kind of goes, go get him, Supergirl.
What?
Well, it was just the, yes, obviously she still knows. So, it was good just to have that in text.
Yeah. I like that.
But it does call into question the, wait a minute, if she knows that Kara is Supergirl, and this is the problem. If she knows Kara's Supergirl, and she knows that she's supposedly Clark Kent's cousin. Clark Kent is about to say, right, see, this is my problem. Is that it means that Kat Grant also knows that Clark Kent is Superman. It really does. And, I don't know how I feel about that.
Maybe she'll be, like, the villain for next season.
I feel like DC shows especially just, like, fuck secret identities, which, okay.
I know. Well, I remember, not DC, but I remember watching the Ben Affleck version of Daredevil, and after the fifth reveal, I'm like, fuck, everybody knows who you are.
And here's the thing, is that for most superheroes, it doesn't matter?
Mm-hmm.
There are very few superheroes that Bendis, of course, got a whole lot of run and writers after him with the whole everyone knows who Daredevil is.
Right.
And again, for a lot of heroes, it doesn't really matter. You know, in the 90s, pre-Wade, actually, over in the Flash stuff, Wally West was just like, fuck it, everyone knows I'm Wally West. Like, and just revealed his identity because he didn't care. So, there has been that shift. The problem is, I think, for me, is that there are three characters who the secret identity is key to.
And Superman would be one of them.
Yeah, Batman, Superman, and Spider-Man.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
The secret identities actually deeply matter to those characters in terms of how they work. And so when you hit that level with Superman, I start going, hey, oh, Twitch, oh, that's not a thing. So that kind of hit me weird. The Flash ending felt like the Flash, like they set up a weirdness. With just who Savitar is, and everyone knew, and they, you know, we've been saying he's been saying he's the future Flash for a year, you know.
Yeah.
And of course it is, it's a time remnant of Barry and the whole stupidity. And it was fine. But it still just, it felt not rushed so much as, I don't know, it didn't quite feel like the cliffhanger they meant.
Hmm.
Like, I get the cliffhanger, obviously, it's not like it's a secret, it's just, It's one of those cliffhangers where we're not going to replace the star of the show for long.
Ugh.
You know, yes, Barry is now trapped in the Speed Force willingly, and he's like, you know, we still have a Flash, and he points at Wally. And so it's like, okay, we're going to get Wally West as the Flash for a little bit. But we also know that's going to last like two episodes.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, we're not going to not have Grant Gustin on the show. And that's, I get annoyed at reviews when they talk about things like this wasn't even suspenseful because we know they're not going to screw with it.
Right.
And so even as I get annoyed at that sort of thing, it does kind of affect things sometimes when you play those stakes too big.
Yeah, and there's something empty underneath it all. It's yeah. Like, yeah, you just you, part of you, you kind of
to
like,
a certain extent.
Yeah.
But I feel like Flash went too far in that role.
Hmm.
Arrow,
on the other hand, that ending was so good, it wasn't even a season ending.
There are five more episodes to go. The Arrow stuff actually was kind of funny. It definitely could have, up until the last few minutes, worked as an end to the series.
Hmm.
Up until the last bit, where you want to talk reducing cast, they basically put the entirety of Team Arrow, including the woman who's the mother of Will, you know, Ollie's kid.
Oh, man.
On the island. And it's like Ollie and his kid on a boat with Chase, you know, Prometheus, and he has the entire island rigged to blow up, and so at the last bit, of course, they blow up the island.
Oh, thank God.
Right. Well, because we're done with the island, because the last bit, so, you know, here he is getting, like,
yeah,
rescued. from 5 years ago. But it's also one of these, like, you know, who on the cast is alive? And I'm like, well, there's one way to force your contract negotiations going into year six.
that's like a Dick Wolf Law and Order move. It's like, here's a script, really is, you die. What?
Yeah, it really is like the entire cast.
Wow.
On the good side, it's like, I mean, from like, what's his name, you know, the police detective on down.
Wow. So, basically, Adrian Chase from Inside Argus obviously got out, and...
Yeah, well, there's a whole thing there.
Abducted everybody and put them on an island halfway around the world.
Yes.
Oh, sure, why not? Travel right. and Arrow has always been a little bit odd, anyway.
Oh, God, like, yes.
I'm off to Nepal. Are you now? Really? Yep, here I am. Oh, I'm coming back. Right. I'm like...
No, it's full of that. And of course, like, Ollie has to, like, free, like, Deathstroke and use, like, Deathstroke and you know,
really? Needs
a ghoul to help him fight this whole thing. And, like, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous in that Big Arrow way. And it was fine. Like I said, it really did make me laugh. That really, it's like now it's down to contract negotiations. Because every single side cast member, except for Ollie, is possibly dead.
That's exciting. That's a good way to end a season, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And I mean, realistically, they could set it up very easily so that none of them are dead.
Right.
Or any number of them. Let's say it's like they have, because we don't, we just have them on the island being like, well, there's no way off this island. Like, oh, what about this? We can't get off. Da-da.
Yeah.
And then we leave them, and then we just have Ollie on the boat, and the island explodes, like, all over the place. You know, every inch of the island is exploding. like, literally, the entire island. And so it's like, okay, well, now we get to just get rid of whoever we want.
I think Adrian Chase is a villain. As they say in gaming communities, he's a bit OP.
Yeah, he was a bit bit overpowered there.
You know what I want to see for the... Here's my dream vision for the opening of the next season, is, sure, like, Chase, Will, and Ollie are on the boat... And they see, like, another boat in the distance, and all the cast members are there. And Oliver says, oh, they're alive. And then Chase just picks up Will and just drop kicks him off the side of the boat.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's I just figured that every episode, for, like, the first three or four episodes of the series, of the next season, mm-hmm. should be like, and they're, like, they're all like, look, no, we're alive, we're on this other boat. And that boat blows up at the end of the episode. And you're like, wait, who survived? And, like, the next episode, they're like, no, see, we're on this raft. Raft blows up. Just, like, string it out every episode. Just keep killing the entire cast.
Oh, we found some planks. Boom.
Yeah, just whatever.
We're riding a whale. Boom. God damn it. You know, it's like, Chase is like, I rigged up explosives to everything. Everything in the world, so I can blow it all up. Yeah. Yeah, uh-huh. You know, whatever. Whatever. It's,
It turned out to be fun, if only for just the sheer audacity of it.
Yes, exactly. I don't know. Still better than the last season's finale, so there we go.
Yeah, no, and it was funny, because keeping the Supernatural ending in mind, I was just like, well, here's another clearing of the decks.
Mm-hmm.
Except with Supernatural, you can see how some of the, well, we're clearing the decks, is very obviously for next season.
Right.
In terms of, like, we know these characters are alive, because this is going to be part of the overall plot.
Yeah. Huh.
But yeah, no, it's... Arrow just very viciously was like, fuck him. And I deeply appreciated it.
Nice. Oh, okay, well, this is... Okay, that's definitely on my list of things to watch now.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure.
I think all of them do work, mind you. They work in the ways of their respective series. Like, the Supergirl one was all tied up in emotion and hope winning the day.
Right, which I think they did last season as well, very much.
It's what they're going to do every season.
Yeah.
The Flash one is very tied up in the, you know, kind of legacy and fight the good fight stuff, and the Arrow one is very tied up into just fucking exploding things.
Investigating the character of Oliver Queen through exploding things.
Pretty much.
Yeah, no, I can get with that. Yeah. I also did not catch the latest iZombie, although... friends of mine who've watched it have said it's a highly amusing one. The Bad Blaine is back, which is great.
Oh my God, Blaine was so good.
See, and I think it was a still from that episode that I saw in one of the Io9's morning spoilers, which made me realize that for sure that Blaine had recovered his memories or had just like gone full bastard again. So I was like, ah, damn it. Now I know.
No, that was good. I know some people who didn't like the episode, but I don't know, whatever. The hell with them.
Yeah.
I did finally catch one pun, and I felt bad that I hadn't caught it until now. One of the guys running for mayor, of course, is Baracus.
D.A. Baracus?
Yes, and somehow I'd never put together the D.A. Baracus. It just kept glancing off my head.
No, it took me until a couple of episodes ago, and I suddenly realized what the deal was. I'm like, oh my God. But it's a bad pun, but in a different way than the usual set of bad puns.
Because it's an ongoing, like, won't escape bad pun.
Right. One thing I do want to see, because that does make me happy about this episode, because I understand that Jason Doring is...
I didn't want to ruin that for you.
It's okay, I already knew, and I was like...
But he shows up, and I didn't know, because I didn't catch his name in the credits.
Ah.
And so they're like, you know, here's this new character comes in, and I hear the voice, I'm like, is that? And then it was.
Yeah. Yes. Awesome.
And I was like, woo, because Jason Doring.
Yeah. Okay, now, yeah, see, I'm excited for that, if nothing else, so that'll be great. That's it. And what about, did you see yesterday's Doctor Who?
I did. I don't know how I feel about it yet.
I really liked it. I think it's the ending that I like the most, obviously.
Yes.
Because much of it felt like fairly, I don't know, it felt like some aspects of Doctor Who that, you know, here are some generals sort of standing around a room, something like this is not that interesting. If you're not UNIT, go away.
I'm not sure why they weren't UNIT, but okay.
Yeah, that's actually what I couldn't figure out either. Maybe they didn't want to have to deal with other characters, like, you know...
they were going to plan to kill them all.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so there's... because exactly, they killed them all. But I'm really... It feels like a bridge to the... Very much felt like a bridge between the last episode, which was just kind of amazing. And the next one, which looks like full-on Russell Davies-style dystopia.
Right.
And that's...
And that continues kind of, my feeling that Moffat's last season is a Davies season.
Yeah. No, that's... It seems to be structured, like some of the themes, the moves are Davies-ish. The structure feels like Davies, in a way that, seasons 5 to 8 or whatever, 9, just didn't felt very much like
I'm going to put forth a theory.
What's that?
I'm going to put forth a theory.
Oh, let's hear it.
Okay, for all modern Who now, until they cancel the show again, Davies is now the default mode of Who. That is the, if you're like, I'm going to make a kind of generic, like nothing that, you know, really has my voice so much. It's just good, fun, like generic Who is now Davies' model.
That kind of makes sense. I think you're right. Just because, I mean, he was the one who revived it. So therefore, our understanding of Who is basically model. Because he tried it out and it was a good working model.
Yeah.
So I think that's good. And I think also he really got the character of the Doctor in a particular way that resonates best.
Yeah, no, I agree. I did think a lot of the episode was kind of a bit hand-wavy. The whole science thing is like, I'm fine with the I made a mistake with the decimal point because my eyes were blurry.
Yep.
Fine, I guess.
That guy was the worst scientist ever. Let's...
Right, but then the, like, I'm hungry, so I'm going to remove my, you know, like, suit, and the woman with him wasn't like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I know.
And then he leaves like both the other... It was just like, it was two or three steps too far.
Yeah, it was sort of like, you are the worst scientist of all time.
You know, also the doctor being like, well, I'm going to go in this lab and that's fine. I'm also going to open the TARDIS. So yeah, that whatever it is gets inside the TARDIS. I'm like, I thought for a minute that they were going to do the whole virus spreads because he stopped it there and then goes somewhere in the TARDIS and opens it up.
Right.
And I was like, that would have been dark as fuck. So I should probably not write Doctor Who, because that's where my brain went.
That's actually that occurred to me as well. Well, I thought, you know, they're usually like a shield, like a defensive sort of shield or atmosphere around the TARDIS. But of course, just letting Nardo walk out, and he's like, "Oh, yeah, you got human lungs." It was sort of like, dude, you basically your callousness toward Nardo is sometimes
like you scan it first. Yeah.
What's that?
Scan for that shit first.
Yeah, yeah, I felt that was really weird because he's one step ahead of everybody, it seems. You know, he's doing his brilliant doctor thing, and then he just sort of, like, does something really weirdly dumb.
And then I had another solution to the problem based off of the TARDIS opening thing.
Uh-huh.
Which is, well, first of all, if where they were, where he teleports in with the TARDIS,
mm-hmm.
is full of the gas, but that's also the chamber where they were standing to blow everything up, then that doesn't work at all. First of all.
Hmm.
Because obviously the gas is in there.
Right.
But I was like, well, you know, if we were going for, well, the TARDIS's air scrubbers can deal with anything.
Yeah.
Just have them suck all the air in the...
into the TARDIS.
In the lab. Yeah. Yeah. So it was just... Again, it was off in a number of Doctor Who sort of ways that I'm fine with.
Yeah, I did feel like I thought there were some great moments. I loved the opening in particular. I thought that was fantastic.
I did like the previously and now thing. That confused me for a second.
It, me too. I was like, hey, what's going on? And I'm like, oh, I see. Aren't you clever people? Yeah. And of course, there's always the chance, because they've introduced the idea of like a simulated world in the previous episode, there's always a chance that the Doctor may have like be trapping them in another simulation. Like, who the hell knows? Maybe not, but... But, I mean, this is always a possibility. So, like, once you start getting, like, simulated realities that are utterly convincing, then you can begin to play with that. And it becomes kind of a get-out-of-jail-free card, but...
I mean, hopefully they don't. Possible spoilers. Because there's been a fan theory or two running around that I'm kind of interested in.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen already from, like, the preview images from before the season started that we're getting the old-school original Cybermen back.
Yes.
And a lot of people have noticed that these aliens, these mummy aliens, whatever the hell they are,
might be Cybermans?
Yeah, waiting to happen, yeah.
Oh.
And they're like, we need consent, like, you need to hit OK to install a program.
Oh, yes, yes, okay.
They want control, that the way their mouths work would lend itself to the Cybermen thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, but I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I'm not entirely sure that I buy it, but it could well be the case. I've heard worse theories. I mean, and if this is a Davies-style thing, then yeah, why the fuck not? just take a villain and make him Cyberman at some point. Sure. So I can see it.
Yeah, again, it's stupid in that perfect Doctor Who way, so...
Yeah. It's an invasion of bugs. What do? Let's call Russell Davies. Make them Cybermen. All right! Excellent.
Woohoo! Yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, but I think, yeah, that could work. I'm really curious. What I'm wondering is if they're just going to resolve this villain in the next episode, or whether this is going to persist in some fashion to the end of the season.
I think it's going to get to the point where we start bringing... I mean, we have to open the vault.
Well, this was actually my guess, was that Nardole and Bill are going to open the vault to deal with the real evil in the world, which is the Doctor, in this dystopian reality.
I don't see the Doctor being the real evil in the world. I see the Doctor telling Nardole to open the vault at some point because they need the thing that the aliens can't see.
Ah, yes. Right, of course, that's what that is. Yeah, right. we do know that. I just think because the next episode shows like the Doctor sort of looking like... I couldn't tell whether he was like sort of being a villain?
Yeah, I didn't see the preview.
Oh, okay, because it looks like the Doctor is a kind of a villain. Mm. Or becomes this weird villainous creature, like figure. So, hard to say... But anyway, yeah. But I think, yeah, the master is the thing that these like, you know, wrinkly fellows, monks, can't see. So yeah. There we go. And that's the other thing. But one thing I did think was actually quite clever in this episode that they didn't really talk about. So maybe it isn't clever because maybe they didn't think of it, is that obviously the monks can see everything that's going on, so they can see what the doctor is doing and know that the doctor is instrumental in in screwing everything up, or instrumental in having Bill sort of like give consent.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it could be that they're always one step ahead of him, but they don't say that. So, and you think if they're going to pull that, then they would actually have them like spell it out, like ah ha ha ha.
Yeah, no, I think if they were going to do that, we'd have their, like, they're watching their screens, and one of them would be in the TARDIS.
Hmm.
And well, they haven't done that, so I don't think that's a thing.
Yeah, fair enough. Oh, well.
You know, I think just, that they can predict him because, you know, they ran all the simulations, but that's as far as that goes.
Right. Oh, there we go. All right. So, but, you know, of course it is, but it's rare that you see the, you know, the Doctor lose. And as of the end of this episode, they've lost big time.
Yep. So yay.
Yay for losing. Yeah, so that was quite good. Are we through? Do you wanna talk a little bit about Alien Covenant?
Sure. A movie I have not seen and have no intention of seeing.
Well, the question is, Adam, which would you rather see, a sequel to Prometheus or a prequel to Alien?
Neither.
How about both?
Woo!
because that is what Ridley Scott has done.
That was always the plan, right? Like,
yeah.
This had to be the bridging film between the two.
Yeah.
It had to
wrap up like the sort of mad science. Fire from the gods plot of Prometheus and figure out how to like introduce the alien. And I watched it with Alan, and she found it nihilistic and awful and just difficult to watch for that. You know, sometimes you see a film and you just come out of it feeling like despairing.
That's an alien movie.
It's an alien movie. But you know, really terrible horror movie. You know, like I felt, but I also felt that way after watching Armageddon. So there you go. I felt like the world was made worse by the presence of that movie. So yes, and it was. But when I watched, I didn't find it bad. Like in the moment of watching it, it was a movie like Ridley Scott. For better or for worse, is, you know, incredibly good at his craft and knows how to execute scene by scene, like wildly entertaining and beautiful to look at stuff. So he was able to do that. But it was a very odd movie, and it was odd in some of the same ways that Prometheus was odd. First off, it was overly concerned with big philosophical questions that I don't think are really that interesting. You know, who created us? Well, who gives a shit? Like, just, who cares, Ridley? Just show us some, like, aliens, you know?
Well, I mean, but that's, to be fair, that's always been on some level, and that was the Prometheus thing. And whenever you're doing a prequel set like that,
yeah,
I think you run into that problem.
Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, and also with the big sort of philosophical themes, I mean, when you think about it, like even like Blade Runner hit the same ideas, but just much more, but a little more subtly in Believe It or Not than Prometheus. The other some good things, like Michael Fassbender is incredible, and he's really the only memorable character in the entire movie, both as Walter, the sort of the android servant. And David, sort of the, you know, the Peter O'Toole imitating mad scientist who's trying to create a perfect organism. I do think it's a little too much to put all those themes on the figure of the xenomorph, because it's just, as you recall from Alien, it was just a really nasty monster that was really hard to kill, and now it's been sort of larded with the weight of, you know, of these like grand ideas.
Well,
and
I mean,
I don't. Yeah, and I'm not sure it's
zombie movies.
What's that?
See also zombie movies.
See also zombie movies. Yes, yes. We want to. We want to turn the subtext of monster movies and make it text. And I always prefer it subtext because then you can sort of enjoy it.
And I think this is okay. Can we dig deep for a second?
Yeah, we can.
Okay, because I think this is something that happened in science fiction and fantasy a few decades ago, in the prose world at least.
Mm-hmm.
Where there is this feeling that we're not legitimate, we're not being taken seriously.
Yes.
So we're going to prove how smart and awesome we are by taking all the things that we do that are really good and intelligent and subtle and just putting them in the goddamn text so you fools can stop missing it.
I think you're absolutely right. Well, I think a lot of... I think not long after sort of maybe the new wave science fiction sort of became, you know, became a thing, you began to get more and more of that sort of like, you know, we're playing with big ideas here, you assholes.
See, I was going to put it in the 80s when you had people who were, and of course, one of our favorite jokes here, you know, that the science fiction novel is so good it's not science fiction.
Yes, yes.
When that started happening is really when the sickness took root.
Yeah.
Because I think that the new wave stuff, you know, of Butler, of... Delaney.
I mean, I think that stuff is really good. I mean, those. Oh, right. Those
I'm just saying that was so above reproach. I don't think that there was any issue of look at us, we're so smart. They were just proving it.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But they still weren't getting the mainstream acceptance, and I think the people after them in like the 70s and into the 80s were the ones who were like, "God damn it! I'm telling you, we're smarter than just like beep boop robot."
Yeah. 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 Good point. Maybe I wonder if Dune has is a culprit in this.
In the same way that Ayn Rand is, a culprit in the other end of it for just basic literature, and it's shit, and people need to move away from it. No, I really don't like Dune. That's me. But yeah, that's okay. It's science fiction grew up in a different way, and not that again the 50s stuff had it. You know, you had people like Sturgeon, you had really good big ideas, but mm-hmm. they were hidden behind beep boop robot a lot of the time because that's what was selling. And then as we did, you know, you had the new wave come along kind of accidentally, because it's not like they knew each other, not like they planned it. It was just this accidental herky jerky movement that worked. But then the 70s you had like the Haldeman stuff, you had you know, all the stuff that, like, and again, I love Haldeman, don't get me wrong, I don't mean to pick on him, but let's be honest. You know, Forever War and all this was, which was partially written as a response to Heinlein, but it was kind of, remember subtext? Yeah, fuck that. And we're going to get your respect if we have to beat you over the head with why we deserve it.
I think you're right on that count. Yeah. Mm.
And I think genre movies were not concerned with it for years until they started being the big things. And once they were being the big things, then it suddenly became if we're going to make the money, we should be respectable.
Right.
And how do we become respectable? Because now everyone's just like, oh, superhero movies, they're the same thing as science fiction. They're just, you know, bullshit, whatever. You know, it doesn't matter that, like, something like the Civil War and, you know, Winter Soldier notes actually have, and even Iron Man 3, has, like, deep, you know, subtext of really interesting issues.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter because people are like, oh, look at them. They're just, you know, superhero movies. And I think it there is this same push, you know, to let's just lay it out. And that's what Passengers tried to do. That's what...
Ugh, yes.
I think so many genre movies that are failing are trying to do is show us why they are important.
I think, you know, and I hate to say it, but I think one of the biggest failings of Snyder's Man of Steel and Batman v Superman is trying to take a lot of subtext and try to sort of turn it around, make it text, but just in the most clunky way. And I think it often it's just a bid for respect. And it's exactly. Like we don't. That's not how you get the respect. You get the respect by crafting a great entertainment and. with ideas that run below the surface and are there for those who want them.
Right, and the people who don't want them, that's fine. They're not going to want them if you tell them that they're there either.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not going to feel bad. They're not going to go, oh, we were missing on this. We were totally wrong. We are sorry. This is not how the world works. Just go out there and make a good goddamn product.
Yes.
And don't be ashamed of yourself. There's that level of they're almost ashamed of the sandbox they're playing in. So they want to show you why they're better than it is.
Yeah.
And fuck that. I mean, just deeply, God damn it, go to hell. Yes. You know, I mean, do something great. And this is, I think, on some level, the difference between Battlestar Galactica and Farscape. One of the many differences. But, you know,
yep.
they talked about the same things a lot of the time. They really did thematically.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, what it means to be human, what it means to deal with the stress, what it means to, you know, be part of a larger universe, what it means to figure out who you are and what your place is and how destructive that can be.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of Farscape, it's a lot of Battlestar. And I understand people like Battlestar a lot more, but frankly, one of them didn't feel the need to tell you that's what we're talking about.
And one of them did not have Edward James almost throwing up on himself in an alleyway.
Sure. Point Battlestar. But my feelings still stand. The less you try to tell me how important you are, and instead just tell me your story in a way that lets me see how important you are. And discover it and discuss it with people and you know, let it sink in and find new things in it, the more you're going to stay around.
Right. But Alien Covenant would like to dispense with all that and mm-hmm. just tell you what's on its mind. I mean, the opening, and here's the thing, like, it's so painful to watch, like just absolutely, like, ravishingly composed shots in the service of just somebody who's like, please take me seriously, please. You know, you've got Guy Pearce as, you know, as Wayland, sort of waking up his creation, David, and David sort of looking around going, question, you know, I have a creator. You do not know your creator. You will die. I will not. I'm like, holy crap, can we get an actual movie now, please?
Well, no. Now here's my one question about the Alien movie. Okay.
Yes.
That I'm actually curious about. Is it, in that beautiful Prometheus way, full of people who are really bad at their jobs fucking up the universe?
Yeah. There is some of that.
I kind of enjoy that. I got to admit, I kind of enjoy it.
And you know, I know. And actually, they're fuck ups in a way similar to the Prometheus crew. And but it didn't, like, when I saw it in Prometheus, it drove me nuts. It just didn't square with me. I was like, why? And in this case, they are fuck-ups. But it didn't bother me this time as much. I'm like, okay. Because I think I kind of went in expecting it.
And again, I actually really liked that in Prometheus. And I feel that everyone else was like, look at these idiots. And I'm like, no, that's the point. You don't go on this, like, trip that you know you're never going to come back from, that's, like, ass into the universe. It's if you're good at your job, like, these are the people who are really bad at their jobs because no one else is that desperate.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right about that. I'm not exactly sure why, and I think it was just something about it that didn't square for me. And I just thought, I know these people are supposed to be screw-ups, but I can't stand watching them be as dumb as they are. I think because they made a point of talking about, like, the expense and, you know, the...
Well, see, but this is part of the subtext of the Alien movies from the first one.
Hmm.
Is that, you know, corporations will fuck up the entire universe.
Oh, yeah. And they're doing it...
lowest bid.
Yes.
Oh, that is the entire Alien franchise.
Oh, yeah.
The bid fucks you up.
And they do it so, especially, I mean, in the first two Alien movies particularly, but I loved it in Alien when you got, space truckers, basically.
Yeah.
And they're there, like, you know, you had Yaphet Kotto and Harry Dean Stanton or sort of just being assholes and going, we want to talk about our shares and stuff. I'm like, this feels right. And when the disaster happens, the thing is they all do their, like, they're not stupid people. They're all doing their best, but they're doing their best against something that they cannot possibly defeat. Like, they're just, right. Like, they're all, and they're coming up with stuff on the fly, and it's like none of it works, and the only thing, as it turns out, is just, like, you know, punting, like, blowing everything up and punting the asshole into space.
Yeah. But, I mean, and I think that is the overall arcing, like, you know, the operating theory of the entire Alien universe.
Yes, very much.
Is it like lowest bid corporation mindset will destroy the world?
Yeah, it's capitalism in space. Exactly.
And I don't really know that we need like 18 fucking movies telling us this over and over and over with one fucking corporation, because at a certain point, they lose their money.
Right.
And that, I think, is the thing that drives me the most nuts with the Aliens movies, is that at no point does Weyland just be like, well, we're gone. Like, it should have been some other corporation to start the thing.
That's kind of hilarious, actually.
Like, it should have been, like, their competitor, you know.
What happened to Weyland Yutani? Oh, yeah, sure. Actually, maybe that's it. Like, in Prometheus, it's Weyland, but by the time you get to Alien Covenant, you're already at Weyland Yutani. So maybe Yutani, like bought them out or something.
Exactly. Again, that's where I kind of like these movies, but it's not... It doesn't feel like that's what anyone else likes about these movies.
Oh, well, no, that's one of my favorite things about those movies.
But I mean, it's everyone's problem with Prometheus.
I guess so. I just thought that idea isn't... The execution wasn't there for me. I'll put it that way.
No, and that's completely fair. And I think that also it was that in the previous movies, there was always one person who, while not necessarily good at their job, was good at this new job by accident.
Right.
And Prometheus doesn't have that.
I think that's exactly it. Yeah, Ripley did whatever job she did, but what she was really good at was surviving against a fucking right. unkillable monster.
Right. And it's not a thing you could put on your resume, because who knows that this one happens.
Exactly.
But I think that it's something that Prometheus would have benefited from. There you go. We've solved it.
Yep. And there's other great things about Prometheus. James Franco is in it, but he actually has no on-screen lines except in like a sort of a video on an iPad. He dies almost like within 10 minutes.
Trying to put on skinny jeans.
He's trying to trim his beard just so, and nicks his
shirt. The Veronica Mars joke.
Yes.
I had to read for it.
Very nice. Very nice. There's an accident on board, and he gets like burned up in his hibernation pod, which gives like the main character who's married to him a little bit of sadness, and it's weird because like Catherine Waterston is really good, but there's just her Daniel's character is just basically a new Ripley, but she doesn't get much to do because
Prometheus.
See, also Prometheus. Yeah, exactly. Because as soon as David shows up, because they have to sort of, after this accident in space, they find another habitable planet nearby. Of course, it's the planet of the engineers, but when they get there, it's a complete hellscape. And, but it's empty, but looks good. And so they walk out, of course, without any sort of helmets on, whatever, and inhale spores and die, several. You know, typical people being stupid in space. And when things get really bad, then they meet David, and then things get even worse, because David turns out to be absolutely crazy. He's sort of taken... Right. He's an early model android who has been given too much volition and agency. And he's basically like, yeah, humans kind of suck. Let's try to make something better. And it turns out the better thing is the alien.
Yeah. I mean, and here's part of the issue. You cannot just willy-nilly decide to recreate Ellen Ripley any more than you can just randomly decide to recreate Sarah Connor.
Exactly. That's you have that absolutely correct.
These are great characters by design. You don't get to just rubber stamp new ones.
Yeah. it's I think it's particularly glaring when you see trying to take it's weird because they have like in Prometheus Scott like hired Nomi Rapace, who played like this utter sort of like badass character from The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and turned her into this sort of like wide-eyed dreamer. And I thought that's a weird choice for somebody whose sort of main main resume so far is being utterly badass.
And if you were following the Ripley thing, it was, I think that there was probably a draft of this where it was, and then she becomes, you know what I mean? Like she finds that same thing of like, this is what she's good at.
Well,
but
exactly.
It never got there. It never got
precisely.
There.
Yeah. I think, it was all a little bit, I think because she was driven by, frankly, I think it's because she was driven by faith that,
yeah,
it was kind of a mistake because I don't mind if a character is driven by religious faith, but she at the end, she's like, I'm going to go find answers. So she all the stuff like finding horror where she thought she'd find revelation didn't break her. Like it didn't even really make a dent.
I'm sorry, just to discuss these all of these stories in a larger context of something like operating theme. The operating theme of the Aliens universe is not touched by faith. And you can't change the operating theme of your universe. You can't do it.
I know, exactly.
You could do a story with it. You could have a side character whose faith is tested. But the overarching operational theme of the Aliens universe doesn't gel with that. And so making that your centerpiece is always going to feel awkward.
Yes. You hit the nail on the head. Because, yeah,
see, folks,
I mean...
come for the shit jokes. Stay for the actual, weird, deep, thematic discussion of writing.
Bingo.
Yeah. Or the other way around.
Or the other way around. Yeah, which we'll give you both. Whether you want your Prometheus sequel or your Alien prequel, we'll give you both. But also, speaking of which, and this is another thing I wanted to talk about, and the thing that makes Alien Covenant, I think, really, really not work in some fundamental ways, is that there's the first part, like the way that David creates his alien is he basically tricks the captain, who's played by Billy Crudup and is really bad at his job. It's actually hilarious how completely awful he is at his job. He's just a shitty manager, is what he is. He says, yes, I want to show you what I've been working on. He takes him to a room full of alien eggs. And he's like, and of course the eggs open. And he's like, no, take a look, it's perfectly safe. And obviously it's not. And then out comes the alien, and as soon as the actual alien pops up, the movie becomes, it just sputters and dies.
Did they accidentally use the Mel Blanc alien? Hello, my baby. Hello, my darling.
Or the or Marvin the Martian, maybe. That's that would be great if we could get these a sing frog alien. Hello, Mark Dogell. I'm deliberately I'm mashing up Mel Blanc or with Looney Tunes stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
so I'm on board.
I was just riffing, and I'm like, maybe I'm just leaving everybody behind here.
No, we're good.
Because I just suddenly pictured that Marvin the Martian's like little sort of helmet popping up out of Billy Crudup's stomach and immediately beetling off to find his Eludium P-37 space modulator.
Oh Jesus Christ! See, that's the movie. That's the movie I want. That's the future liberals want. Oh fuck! Yes.
But here's the other thing. Of course, is they leave the surface of the planet and they big fight, with the alien. And of course, another one pops up on the ship because somebody else has been implanted without nobody didn't realize it. And then you get that shower scene, which has been in all the trailers.
I haven't seen it.
Ah, okay. Well, in all the trailers. We're in most of the trailers.
I'm trying to think if I've seen a single trailer for it. I don't think I have.
Oh. Well, now is the time to watch the trailers. For some reason. There's a steamy shower scene that turns into a particularly unwanted threesome. when an alien shows up and kills the character whose names you don't really
remember. That went somewhere different in my head than I bet it does in the movie.
Very much. Although they're kind of making it, they kind of tried for something.
Making it awkward.
Making it awkward. Now I'm picturing the alien like literally wrapped in a white towel, sort of like.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's like, you know, yeah.
But yeah, so there's these two characters are making out, and then the alien shows up, and of course kills them in, you know, the usual glory ways. Yeah, and it's sort of like.
Alien with like a knife.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, what is now suddenly there's, and I don't mind like a sort of a gory exploitative sort of scene like that in an alien movie or in any horror movie, but it was really odd to put it. It's right at the end. It was just the weirdest thing. I'm like, this is the beginning of a horror movie. You're grafting the beginning of another movie onto like the middle of a different kind of movie. It's almost like HBO sort of like TV programming has infected movies so that you don't get discrete units anymore at all. You get like bits of one movie and then like with another movie, which you can then watch the rest of in a couple of years. It's really bizarre. Just the way we're consuming culture is resulting in some really strange individual products. And then, you know, then they sort of shoot the other alien out into space in the same way they did with etc. But, you know.
I'm just applying sound effects. Don't mind me.
Yeah, that's okay. But then, spoiler, of course, the thing is that there's two identical androids, one, the good android and the bad android, and you think, well, you absolutely know that the good android is not the one making it back, and that the real evil, of course, is David, who's pretending to be Walter. And when he's putting them in their cryopods, you know, the Daniels, played by Catherine Waterston, realizes what's going on, and then David's basically got like 2,000 like frozen bodies to experiment on, which is fantastic. I actually really enjoyed that. It's like, okay, here I am, gonna make me some more aliens.
Yikes.
Anyway, so there you go. Sorry, I know I spoiled the movie for you, but I know you have no intention of watching it.
It's
so.
True. None. Yeah, just none.
So, but then in a couple of years' time, I'll spoil like the next Alien movie for you.
That works.
Yeah.
And
Blade Runner 2049.
No, we're not even discussing. It's like the Hitcher movie that doesn't exist.
Yes. Fair enough.
Does not exist.
Sorry, I just enjoy saying Blade Runner 2049, because even the name is annoying enough. So.
Yeah, it is. God. So we were gonna talk. We're hitting the hour mark.
Oh yes.
We were gonna talk some other stuff, but we'll do that next week. Because we can.
because it is possible.
But yeah, I don't know. We're hitting the hour mark. We'll cue some music. Move away from these terrible, terrible, like ongoing. Everything has to be a franchise, endlessly thing, and try again next week. What do you say?
Right, and we'll have a women's only podcast next week. Only
oh,
women
we're not
going to
discuss the fucking whiny goddamn crybabies.
Yes, I wasn't even gonna. I mean, I wasn't gonna have a serious discussion of it on the show.
No, I know.
It's so retarded. Sorry, yeah. Forgive the use of the word, but it is ridiculous. Yeah.
Yes. All right. We'll cue some music for the meantime.
Yay, music!
Woo!